Hello and welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are back. We just got done looking at some cool books. In between episodes, John let me know that the Folio Society, which if you don't know, the Folio Society, they do absolutely amazing renditions of very popular books. It's like a publishing house.
Not sponsored, by the
way. No, not sponsored. I love them. They're just really, really, really cool. They have recently announced that they are going to be continuing their Dune series with God Emperor and have some very interesting art that comes along with it.
I like it a lot. It's not entirely book accurate per se, but like, also don't know how early on in Leto's transformation this is. Mm-hmm. It still looks super cool. And I think it's time that I just go ahead and pull the plug on these Folio Society books. They're expensive,
the heart plug from David Lynch's 1984 Dune.
Yeah.
they're super cool. And if you have a spare $300 or so laying around.
Fucking expensive. Oh my god.
Yeah, you can get the first three, but they're awesome collector's editions of these books. Worthy of any Dune nerd's bookshelf.
Yeah, definitely. But we're not talking about books. No. Well, we are, but
I will be. Yeah.
Not these books. Today we're talking about minute 114 through 115, and we're starting off with a
unnecessary use of voice.
Well, yeah, probably. So I was actually thinking about this while I was eating lunch, while I was waiting for you to get here. And I agree that it's an unnecessary use of the voice. However, I think that it is still needed for one reason and one reason alone. Jessica knows that Chani has always been pretty like adverse to the whole prophecy thing. And Jessica knows that Chani is needed for this prophecy. And I think by using the voice, it subconsciously directs this one Fedaiken that she's speaking to that you will never take no for an answer from Chani.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Is that a bit of a stretch? Maybe, but I think that's the one like justification for it. What I think it actually is I think it's Denis Villeneuve and the production wanting to just like turn Jessica almost more into like a villain.
You think they're vilifying her?
I think they are a little bit by turning her more aggressive and more headstrong into fulfilling the Missionaria Productiva work that's been done by the Bene Gesserit.
Yeah.
Like it's at the point where like she sees the goal line is right there and she's just dropped all consideration for subtleties at this point. Like she is right there. She just needs this one person to be here and it's done. So she's just kind of throwing caution to the wind and just going for it.
I mean, fine. I don't
know. I still agree that I think it's an unnecessary use of the voice and that there's been unnecessary use of the voice by Jessica recently.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to start talking about my book shit now. This whole thing takes place over the span of 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Again, we get some time dilation here in the movie. I think we get some time dilation here in the movie because Paul is not asleep for a long, long time. No. Spoilers for later in this minute. So he does his Water of Life thing, or really we just kind of come into it in the middle of it.
Yeah.
This chapter starts with Chani arriving in the north from the south, where she has left Leto II, the first, with Alia and Hara.
Mm-hmm. Soon to be attacked.
Soon to be attacked, yes. Maybe already attacked at this point. I don't know. We all, again, don't know how long it takes to get from the south to the north. So she gets there and she's asking Jessica, like, they're being like super coy with each other. And a lot of like formalities, and just like we hear the internal monologue of Chani and Jessica at the same time, but like Chani's like, why the hell is she beating around the bush right now? Just get to the point, lady.
Yeah.
And we realize that yes, or the message that Chani received from quote unquote Paul for her to come to from the south to the north was actually sent by Jessica.
Yeah.
And when she asked why, Jessica goes, I'm not entirely sure why. You know, or in so many words, she says, I'm not entirely sure why. I felt like this gut feeling that you needed to be here. So it's much less aggressive in the books.
Yeah.
And taking your theory here of like Jessica sees the end goal. And so she's just like pushing for them to get Chani here implies that she knows why Chani should be there, or that there is a specific purpose for Chani being there that Jessica is trying to make happen.
Yeah. And I want to talk about it, but it is not in this minute. And
this is we're getting into next week conversations.
Yes.
Which we will talk about the significance of those here in just a little bit. But I want to set the stage for these questions so that we can talk about them and get them answered next week.
Yeah.
My point being this, I find this to be a super unnecessary use of the voice. And what it makes me think is that Jessica has a hard time controlling the voice when she is at a heightened state.
Yeah, no, I believe that makes sense.
Yeah.
Certainly not as proficient at using the voice as say Reverend Mother Gaius Helen Moheim or, you mm-hmm. know, Bene Gesserit's sister, Margot Fenring, but
right.
You know, enough clearly to, you know, pass whatever tests on Wallach 9 that she needed to do.
Right.
I can agree with that. You know, she's kind of losing control of her faculties or whatever, in this heightened urgency. I think what you and I are getting at is essentially the same thing, just in two different ways of saying it.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree there.
Yeah.
So unknown bows his head.
But yeah, just immediate, you know, head bow and turns and walks away.
Yeah.
And then we cut to however much time has passed with another wide away shot of
yep.
the Temple of the Maker. And we see
an now with 100% more ornithopter.
Yeah. Yeah. Notably, this ornithopter is the same model as mm-hmm. Orny 2 from Dune Part 1.
The one that they got in the ecological testing station.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I had that note as well. Great design. Love it. Classic design.
Yeah. It's a little more dragonfly, I think. Yeah. A little less, you know, sharp angles.
Right. And then we get a badass shot of Jessica watching it land.
Angry eyes too.
Angry eyes. She's in her very simple head covering here.
That's one of the frames that I mm-hmm. immediately grabbed when we were custody battling over our frames from Ben over at A Shot in the Dark,
yeah.
70mm.
It's an awesome, awesome scene.
It's such a cool shot of her.
Yep. And Chani's flying this ornithopter,
mm-hmm.
Which led me to think, did we ever get any indication that she knew how to fly an ornithopter?
Nope.
Okay. All right, cool. Huh. Interesting.
We've seen Chani adjust technology, but
sure.
never said, oh, hey, I know how to fly ornithopters, by the way.
Right. So it's like, okay.
Now, here's a question. Would Liat Kynes have taught her? Because, okay, so I've been thinking about it a little bit, and some folks on Blue Sky brought this up in some conversation back and forth. We never get any indication that the Liat Kynes that we see in this movie isn't Chani's mother.
That is true. That is true. We really don't get any indication either way
there. Yeah. So
is the absence of a thing proof of the thing, you know?
Yeah. So let's assume then that there is the relationship and it is still there.
Sure.
It's not a far jump to say that Liat Kynes wouldn't have taught her daughter how to fly. Because right. if Liat Kynes had an ornithopter, Liat Kynes would know how to fly. And we know that Leah Kynes knows how to fly from the everything that was going on when Leto took her out to the desert to see the spice fields.
Yes. I think a simpler explanation for this is that the Fremen, this is part of, you know, Fedaiken training.
Maybe. Yeah.
Because, you know, they're out in the desert. Ornithopters are a common thing that you run into.
Well, they're ornithopters of Fremen make, too.
Sure.
So.
So it's like, yes, it would be a natural thing for them to learn how to do this. We have just not had any indication that Chani knows how to do this, or if it's a thing that happens regularly. Yeah. But whatever, she lands it. It's cool. And she, you know, books it from the ornithopter into the temple.
Just immediately runs past Jessica.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you noticed, she also just left Stilgar.
I didn't see him there at all.
So he's like slowly working his way out because he's still hurt, presumably.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's just like slowly working his way out of the ornithopter. And she's just like, nah, fuck it. You'll figure it out, dude. Just books it right into the temple.
That's fine.
And, you know, she runs in. She's like, where is he? And immediately sees Paul in the middle, poetically, between sand and water.
Yeah.
Laying down. There are...
Good catch. I didn't think on that. That's good. That's nice.
There are pilgrims galore inside, all praying.
Yep.
And she sprints to him, kneels down, and is like kind of grabbing his face and turning his head, just saying, I'm here, what happened? I'm here, screams what happened at the pilgrims, and they just all like look down and just like keep praying and everything.
Yeah, they are not saying anything.
Yeah.
We get a wider shot of the other folks who are in the temple here, and they're making like, you know, prayer gestures all around, also diverting their eyes. They're
all,
not
all the same movements and motions that we've seen since part one.
Yep. Stilgar, Reverend Mother Jessica, and some others approach, notably Gurney is among them.
Yep. Gurney just kind of standing in the doorway.
Yeah. Yep.
Looming in the shadows.
Yeah. And Chani's like, she brings her face down close to Paul's face, and she says, he's dead. And Reverend Mother Jessica responds. She says, his vital signs are. And that's where we end. So that is a hell of a cliffhanger for this week. A
fucking mid-sentence cut. God damn it.
Yeah, there's a heck of a cliffhanger. So let's talk a little bit about this.
Yeah.
So I said the directional beeves.
Yep, the south-north flip.
South-north, north-south kind of thing. There is, I don't know, just a lot more... I mean, obviously, there's a lot more nuance in the books. That's the point of a book versus a movie adaptation. It's always going to be that way.
Yeah. 650 pages versus 5 hours of movie.
Right. Yeah. Right. So Chani doesn't know why she summoned. Jessica doesn't actually know why she summoned her. Paul took the Water of Life 3 weeks ago in the book. And he's just been lying comatose, basically, ever since then.
He's just been tripping this whole time.
Right. And I'm going to spoil a little bit. His vital signs are so low that they cannot be detected is what the book says.
Yeah.
We'll figure out what the movie says next week. But in the books, Jessica explains that his vital signs are so low, it cannot be detected. The people who are around the temple here, they are like, he's dead. Like he's for sure dead.
Yeah.
And we get, Jessica basically being like, yeah, they want to go ahead and, you know, claim his water. I'm not letting them do that because I can detect the bodies or the vital signs.
Sure.
And, she's just like, those fucking idiots don't know what they're talking about.
Look at these fucking dumbasses.
Right. And this is the most like reverential is not the right word, but passionate. I think that we've seen movie Chani. Like this week.
Yeah.
A lot of passion, a lot of emotion coming from her. Whereas normally
more
she's...
More passion, more energy.
Yeah.
More energy.
Normally it's just like we get like scowling, brooding Chani.
Yeah.
But, you know, here, obviously the person that she's in love with, in a relationship with, is down for the count. And she's very concerned about it.
I wouldn't say that we haven't seen this passion, though. Like, we saw it.
It's few and far between.
She's not the Chani from the book where she's just brooding or where she's just like swooning over Paul the whole time.
And okay, maybe a better way of saying what I'm saying is like, this is the closest that book Chani and movie Chani get.
Yeah.
Because we've talked at length about how they're just different characters.
It got pretty close too during the naming ceremony.
I mean, sure.
And the subsequent scenes afterwards where they're talking about, you know, on my home planet, everything that you see is sand was water and you could dive into it.
And, right. And she's like, what's a dive? Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, but I feel that this is the closest that the two characters get.
That's fair. Yeah.
And, you know, as she's walking up to the temple in the book, she's thinking like, oh, Muad'Dib, Muad'Dib. You know, most people say that word as a battle cry, but I know I'm different. He's my lover, my husband, whatever. And so she's just really, really emotional in the books here and super fucking confused about what is going on. Now, as much as I hate doing this, I think I'm thinking more about the book, and I think I have to save it for next week because we have
such unfortunate cutoff timing with the end of this.
Yeah. And we're dipping a toe into the deep waters that this scene and the next couple of weeks really, are going to bring us. So
yeah.
Why don't you tell the lovely folks listening to this, what is happening next week?
Oh, you're talking about deep waters, brother. I think next week's episodes are probably going to be our longest minute episodes, and it's not even going to be close. So I'm sorry for you to have to edit those.
That's fine.
But you know what? I've done enough editing with all the other episodes. I think you can afford to do these ones.
Oh, how the turntables, my friend.
Next week, we will be joined by the one, the only Dune Navigator Martin.
Yes.
I'm so fucking excited.
It's going to be great.
You know, like you said, deep waters of lore and Dune in storytelling and like one of the biggest moments in the movie. And I could not think of a better guest for this.
Yeah. It's going to be great. Super excited to have Martin on next week. And I mean, if you thought we were nerds about this stuff,
bro, we ain't shit.
No, I'm ready to get just fucking schooled.
Yeah.
In this, because the links or the depths of Martin's knowledge about Dune is insane.
Yeah.
So super excited to have him on next week. Please join us for those. And we are going to just talk about what the heck is going on with Paul and how Chani, why she was summoned here and all sorts of stuff. So good set of minutes coming your way next week.
Yes. I've had these minutes planned with Martin. So he was the first guest that I coordinated for this season. And I wanted to let him pick based on, you know, what he wanted to talk about. And I've been sitting on, you know, waiting to do these since about February.
Right.
So I'm very excited to finally, you know, get to sit down and record with him.
Yep.
Not saying I haven't, you know, been excited with our other guests because I've had so much fun with David and Alicia and Deez.
Yeah.
But this is prime time Dune shit right here.
Yep. Yeah, it is.
But before we wrap for today, it's Friday, which means one thing. Shai-Hulud's. So where are you sitting with this week? We saw 7 earlier, and then we saw 10, and then we saw 1 Shai-Hulud. So, how many of those 10 Shai-Hulud's are with you?
I'm happy to say that this week was a lot better than last week.
Yes. I don't think it could have gotten much worse from our rating
right
than it was last week.
Now, was it a perfect week? Absolutely not. There were some weirdsies. I don't like Jessica's use of the voice here. That was clunky. There's some clunky dialogue towards the beginning of the week. But all in all, this was a good week of minutes. So I got to go a solid 7 here.
Yeah.
It's good placement. I mean, obviously, we get to see Alia.
Yep.
And
a grown Alia.
A grown Alia. And with whatever baggage that entails, it was really cool to see her on screen.
And like I said, I'm reserving my judgment of Alia until we actually see Anya Taylor-Joy portray Alia in full effect. Yeah. Like,
and it's not even that. It's just like, what are the writers going to take, or what are the writers going to do to make the story make sense for the books? Yeah. I have no doubt that Anya Taylor-Joy will do a fine job, or even a good job, a great job of portraying this character, because she's a very good actress. But it's the writing that worries me.
I definitely have some concerns about the writing and everything, but I'm also going to be honest with you. Like, Anya Taylor-Joy has a hell of an actress to not compete against in her portrayal of Alia, but Daniela Amavia's performance and portrayal of Alia from the sci-fi miniseries.
Yeah. Very good.
Was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know if I can not compare the two when we get there. And I don't want to like pre-assume anything, but sci-fi miniseries is kind of kicking Denis movie's asses in terms of its portrayal of Dune.
Yeah. In terms of like sticking to canon, sure. But in terms of like marketability, no.
No, definitely not.
Sorry.
Definitely not. But no, I'm still very excited to see Alia. I am firmly with you. Solid 7.
Yep.
You know, this isn't, you know, definitely not the worst week that we've had, but a much better week than the previous few. And we're really, you know, shit is getting ready to hit the fan.
Yep. All right. Cool, man. Yeah. Well, that, I think we'll do it.
Yep. That's this week. Solid 7s all around.
Mm-hmm.
7, our original 7 Shai Hulud that we saw.
That's exactly right.
In the meantime, while we are waiting until next week's episodes, you can find the Dune Minute online. We are on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com if you'd like to get in touch with us. We will be back Monday with our very, very special guest, Dune Navigator Martin, and we will see you all then.
See you later.